During the last 37 years, Colorado has resettled nearly 60,000 refugees, with the majority arriving from East Asia. Refugees are not immigrants, although both want to remain in their new country. An immigrant is seeking permanent residence, while a refugee is fleeing from persecution, a natural disaster, or war, and may return. Greetings again, I'm Adam Morgan. Most Americans are not aware of the distinctions between refugee and immigrant. The arrival of immigrants has a high news visibility currently, whereas refugees, a thoroughly investigated group before they are allowed in, are too often mixed in with them and should not be. The Spring Institute for Intercultural Learning works to ease the arrival of refugees by supporting their success across all languages and cultures. On this edition, we gain additional insight to the Spring Institute and their support of refugees as we continue our conversation with Institute President Ms. Paula Schrieffer.
For many of the countries that are producing the world's refugees, they have been countries where there has been conflict or there has been political persecution or authoritarian or even dictatorship governments in place, sure, that it has not been possible for people to go back. And then, of course, once you're away long enough and you really have reestablished a new life, and I'll emphasize, the vast majority of refugees to the U.S. become citizens. So for them, this is their country. This becomes their country. And they will keep those connections with family if they've still got them there. Many of them will send money home if they can. They will visit if they are able and it is not dangerous. They can't move back there and abandon this new life that they've created.
Well, one of the things I think I hear you also saying is that if America wants to be one of the world players and be involved in the world and become a part of international trade and all that, then America also has to participate with refugee resettlement and other aspects that other countries are doing at the same time as well.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely right. And as, you know, a geographically large country, as a very wealthy country economically, for other countries to look at us and see us saying, hey, we're no longer going to help you guys out and take some of this burden really off of your shoulders, I think it sends a very bad signal. And I think it will make it trickier to get the cooperation of countries who are just overwhelmed with the number of refugees that have crossed into their borders. But I'll also say what's interesting about the attack on the refugee resettlement program, there's neither a security advantage, as we've been talking about, but there's not an economic advantage either. So people also, I think, operate under this misperception that we spend a huge amount of money on resettling these refugees, and that is money that we're not spending on other things here at home and on our own populations. And in reality, that's not true either, because what happens is refugees come here and they very quickly become self-sufficient and they become part of our communities. And so for every dollar that we might spend in the first few years when a refugee is getting settled, getting their feet on the ground, getting their job, learning the language, they will pay back $1.68 to us through the taxes that they will be paying, through the jobs that they will be creating, and through the activity that they'll be putting back into our economy.
But you said that if we're spending the money to resettle them, and then a part of their resettlement is work, so the taxes and that they're paying, that's where we get the $1.68 from.
That's right.
And then at some point when we stop supporting them, their resettlement, because they have got it accomplished, then they are adding to the economy like regular Americans do.
That's exactly right. And also what we pay up front is quite limited. I think people don't realize how little we actually provide these individuals when they're brought here. And these are people who...
Well, some people will say it's a social program.
Yeah,
come on.
Right.
But it's not
interesting.
Like the welfare programs
it's
and
not.
Stuff that we normally do for Americans.
That's right. And you know, people also don't realize that, for instance, even when we fly them here, they have to pay us back for the cost of their ticket. That's a loan. So they actually arrive here in the United States in debt to the U.S. government. They have to pay that back. Average refugees get jobs within a month and a half of being here in the U.S., whether they speak our language or not.
I was about to say that. Language is not an issue, and they're able to find work.
They find work. Often they find work that is not the kind of work that they're really qualified to do back in their home countries, but they're so vested in the opportunity to build a new life and a life for their children that they are willing to take work that is often kind of well below what they're qualified to do, but they want to immediately start becoming contributing members of our community, and they do it.
And they do it, and they get it done.
They do it.
I mean, Americans can learn something from them about how they operate here, and we're born here. And I guess we assume a lot of things are just going to happen for us, but when you really work at it, you can do some good stuff there.
You can. And, you know, we know refugees who come here, and maybe they don't speak any English, and they'll take a job up in Greeley, you know, working at the meatpacking plant, and they will literally get on a bus and drive up there, you know, over an hour and a half each direction, work all day long in a very, very difficult, physically demanding and dangerous job, and come back. And some of them will take English classes on top of it.
Yeah.
So these are people who, you know, really, really, they show us something about what human beings are capable of.
One thing I have to ask you, and you probably don't have the answer to this, but I'm thinking maybe you heard about it along the way from the people that you work with. Do we have Americans going abroad looking to be resettled by other countries?
We don't. We do have Americans, of course, that
expatriates
go abroad, right? And some of them will go abroad and maybe not do well financially, but that they would not be able to be resettled as refugees. I just think it's important that people realize that, you know, these types of helping others and helping refugees come here doesn't prevent us from helping Americans who need help on our own shores.
Yeah.
There, it's not an either or. And in fact, because of the economic contributions that these people make, they actually help us fund our own programs that Americans themselves need. So it's not a competition for resources. We can do all of those things.
Mm-hmm. At Spring Institute, you help refugees become citizens.
Refugees have a big advantage on gaining citizenship than non-refugee immigrants, for instance. So refugees are eligible to apply for citizenship within 5 years of being resettled here to the U.S. And organizations like the Resettlement Agencies, Lutheran Family Services, and the African Community Center, and the International Rescue Committee, their caseworkers help those refugees that they resettle apply for and gain citizenship. And so it is a relatively easy process for refugees compared to immigrants who come here and apply for citizenship.
Yeah, because the refugees have been vetted so well.
That's right. They've been vetted.
Yeah.
And they have a slightly different legal status, and that enables them to apply for, and again, very high success rate in attaining citizenship. They want to be citizens. They become citizens, and they become active citizens. You very rarely hear of refugees who gain their citizenship and don't go vote.
Yeah, we've seen some of them in political commercials lately, which is a whole different conversation once upon a time. Yeah. In your adult education at Spring Institute, you do English language courses.
We do.
One of the other things I saw that really was interesting was regarding health.
Yeah, yeah.
And health terminology. so they know what's going on. Tell me about the health thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I always ask Americans, do you understand our healthcare system? And they kind of look at you like, nobody understands our healthcare system. Well, imagine if you were coming here from another country with a completely different system. Again, you don't speak the language very well, and you're trying to navigate our healthcare system and understand how it works. It's absolutely confusing and mind-boggling to these folks. So we run programs that really help newcomers, both refugees and immigrants, understand and have access to our healthcare system. So again, refugees have a big advantage because refugees tend to be, almost all of them are low income when they arrive. Most of them have lost most of, if not all, of their possessions when they had to flee their home country. So they are eligible for Medicaid when they come over. So they have coverage, but they don't know how to use it. And so oftentimes they'll just stay away from the healthcare system until there's an emergency and go to the emergency room. Well, nobody wants that. That is not the best use of those resources. So we really teach them, this is what your health coverage covers for you. You need to go in for checkups. You need to get a primary care doctor. Here's how you can get to the hospital if you have a health condition that won't allow you to get your own transportation to the hospital. And for them to know that if you're going to a medical facility that does take Medicaid or any federal dollars, that there is a requirement that there be language interpretation for them because they have to be able to understand what the doctor or the nurse or whoever is saying to them.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about in your health literacy and that kind of thing. You have to connect for how our system works compared to their system that they came from. And so that they have a meaning of when a doctor's going to put a stethoscope on your chest, what that really means, you know.
That's exactly right.
And some words just don't translate.
or they don't translate very well. And actually, we also run a training program for medical interpreters because it's a hugely important field now because, as you say, a lot of these terminology, it's not terminology that – you know, most of us speak in every day, even as native-born speakers, right? So, so there is a really important role for these interpreters to play, kind of building that communication bridge between the doctors and the nurses and the patients. And again, we have an increasingly diverse community here, and we're becoming to have an increasingly diverse staff of medical providers as well, but we still need those people to provide that interpretation and that communication so that, you know, if the doctor tells somebody that you've got a certain condition and this is what you need to be doing and this is the medication you need to be taking and this is how often you need to be taking that medication, that person has to understand that. Or else they go home with a bottle of pills and they think, gosh, that was an expensive bottle of pills. I think I'm just going to take one of these every other day so I'll have them, for a few months down the road. And, of course, that's not the right approach.
And another thing you do in the health area is that you help foreign health professionals become licensed in America.
We do.
And so you have to go through the literacy, the meanings and the translations and all that just so they can take the test that they have to take or whatever the licensing procedure it is that they have to go through.
That's right. And people would be surprised at how difficult we make it for internationally trained professionals to get relicensed here, particularly since we have such a huge need for medical professionals. As you know, we have shortages of nurses, we have shortages of doctors, particularly primary care doctors, and particularly in our rural areas. And we have this whole wealth of talent and expertise in people who come here either as refugees or as immigrants, and yet we make it incredibly difficult for them to get relicensed. In some cases, they basically have to start over because their credentials are not really recognized. Mm-hmm. But in some cases, there are a lot of shortcuts that they can take, and so we help them navigate that process and get back into a field where they're not only doing better for themselves and using their expertise, but we as a community are benefiting from that expertise and they're filling some of those shortages that we have.
Most Americans think of refugee support as, oh, we have to do is teach them English and they'll be okay. And no, it's a lot more than that the Spring Institute does.
It does.
What one or two things are they needing most now? The refugees need most now that you're seeing?
It really depends on where they're from and what their experiences have been. But most refugees need mental health assistance. They need career services and career navigation. They need health navigation, as we've been talking about. And, you know, many refugees have children and they have young children. And they don't understand our school system and our education system. And they need to be introduced to the benefits of early childhood education so that when their young kids start in kindergarten, that they're not already behind the other kids. And they're already going to have a little bit of a harder time because they are going to speak with an accent, even if they've managed to learn English before they've started school. So we want to make sure that they are prepared and that they're not starting off as a disadvantage. So those are some of the kind of main areas that we see that people really need some help in. Of course, they need help with the language. And that's been a really consistent ongoing part of the refugee resettlement process is ensuring that they have access to English language training.
Many thanks to Ms. Paula Schriever, president of the Spring Institute for Intercultural Learning, for sharing her thoughts and expertise on refugee resettlement again with us on this edition. You too may learn more or attend one of their variety of fun events by going online to springinstitute.org or by calling 303-863-0188. I'm Adam Morgan. Do keep in touch, and we thank you for sharing a few moments of your weekend with us.